Welcome to PR After Hours, your weekly cocktail of news and interviews with leading thinkers in PR, marketing, and business. So pull up a chair in our virtual lounge. Your host, Alex Greenwood, will be right back after this.
Is your story reaching the right ears? Or is it just another whisper in the wind? In the symphony of the marketplace, your narrative should sing. Alex Greenwood, a maestro of messaging with over three decades of expertise, is ready to conduct your story to new heights. From navigating the nuances of public relations, to authoring novels that capture the imagination and producing podcasts that speak volumes, Alex crafts narratives that resonate and yield results. Turn the page to a new chapter. Let Alex Greenwood orchestrate your story to captivate, engage, and inspire. Step into the spotlight. Visit alexgpr.com or contact him through this podcast today, and let's start a conversation that matters.
It's going to be a bit sketchy on today's episode. No, I don't mean sus or whatever the kids say these days. I'm talking about the power of visual storytelling to communicate complex ideas with nothing fancier than a writing instrument, a notepad, or a tablet. Ashton Rodenheiser's enthusiasm for elevating the creative essence in everyone she encounters is so evident, not just in what she says, but in what she doodles. With her venture, Mind's Eye Creative Consulting, she has breathed life into more than 2,500 presentations using both digital and traditional mediums. She's on a noble quest now, teaching students the art of science of doodling, and it is an unparalleled thinking and learning apparatus. When she's not revolutionizing the visual communication world, you'll find her enjoying delightful moments with her family in the picturesque landscapes of rural Canada. Well, let's take note of Ashton's book, Beginner's Guide to Sketchnoting, and more about graphic facilitation. Ashton Rodenheiser, welcome to the Virtual Lounge.
Wow, thank you for that introduction. It makes me always sound a lot fancier than I feel most days. So thank you so much.
I think it's a compliment when you say that, because I think, okay, she's really great at visualizing what people say. And I think I'm decent at, you know, the word part. Thank you.
You're very good. You're very good.
Thank you
probably
very much.
Why you host a podcast. Probably why you do that. Hey?
It has something to do with it. Maybe. Yeah. Mayhap. You have seamlessly blended visual art with communication to transform these mundane meetings we all endure into captivating experiences. It's something I sincerely envy about you. It's so great. Can you share some insights on how visuals can make meetings more engaging and productive? And I'm talking about, please, if you would, differentiate between a PowerPoint visual.
Oh my gosh.
And what we're talking about. So go.
Yeah. So, you know, to paint a picture.
Oh my goodness. Really,
I know, right? I had to throw that one in there. I never know what's going to be said. So I like to be in the moment with everybody else hearing that information for the first time. So it's this listening, this making sense, and this capturing kind of circle that's grounded in visual communication and a visual vocabulary. So there is an element of translation, right? I'm hearing something and I'm thinking of a picture or an image that I could draw to help represent that. It does go a little bit more beyond just kind of straight transfer and application of or translation into more of like, how do these ideas weave together? How are they connected? How are they separated? What's kind of rising to the top? So yes, I'm the sort of professional illustrator kind of there helping everybody from, you know, folks that consider themselves visual learners, which is a high percentage of people, neurotypical and neurodiverse people, kind of like every kind of space of how you learn. It's well beyond just creating a pretty picture, but trying to help communicate. So yes, I'm the professional illustrator, but I also kind of consider myself a bit of a professional listener in that space as well to try to help people digest. And I love working with people who care about the learning and the engagement of the people in the room.
Well, if you're not a good listener, you're not going to be a good facilitator, no matter whether you do what you do or what I do. I facilitate quite a bit. I do a lot of focus groups. I'm a PR guy by day, of course. And nice. And I've worked with a colleague who kind of, it's interesting. He's one of my longtime colleagues. His name's Mike Brown. He runs the Brain Zooming Group. And he's never taken traditional notes. And the first time I met him, you know how you have a meeting with somebody, and even if it's at lunch or whatever, and you know, I'll have a discreet little note-taking device. I've moved on to the Remarkable 2 lately, but which I really like. Yeah. And I might ask you if we have time at the end about certain devices, but he would always whip out a sketch pad with the spiral binding. Right. Yeah. And just draw what I was talking to him about. He did a lot of what you do. And it was the first time I'd ever seen such a thing. And I thought, that's really great. But whenever I do it, it just looked like chicken scratch. It just didn't make sense. So I promptly got rid of it. So I'm curious though, was there a moment when you were like, this is how I should start taking notes just for myself? Was there a genesis here?
So I've always been very creative, and I've tried so many different art mediums, but I didn't actually draw a whole lot. You know, I was like 10 years old cross stitching like a little old lady. And so I'm a dabbler in many art forms, but there was a lot of story in my family and community. You know, artists don't make any money, don't even bother going to art school. So it wasn't even in my wheelhouse of consideration. And so I started working after I did a little bit of education after high school at a family center. And while I was there, I was introduced into community development and facilitation work. And I really fell in love with the way that you can facilitate a meeting or a session or a group with people and create a safe space for them and allow them to, you know, speak what their own wisdom, and you can ask the questions and feed that back to them and to their own learning.
Right.
I really, really fell in love with that process. And so a few years after doing that, a friend of mine had kind of just said, hey, there's this thing called graphic facilitation. I was like, what's that? I took a one day workshop and I totally fell in love. I was like, this is this beautiful piece of me that feels like I always kind of wish I could have been an artist, but didn't really feel like I had the chops. And this like communication facilitation world that I really was falling in love with. So I came into this space more from that facilitation lens, actually, rather than sort of the artist lens. And I really shied away from telling people how little art education or experience I had, because I didn't think people would hire me or take me seriously. But more recently, I've really leaned into it more because now I'm educating people on how to do this for themselves. I'm like, I'm not a formal artist, you know, art trained. I barely have taken an art class. You know, I took music lessons and things like that, but not really art classes. So that's sort of kind of how I ended up in this space, less from the creative side, even though I've always been creative, but less from a formal side, but more from a formal, the listener, the thinker, the synthesizer, the creating safe spaces for people kind of space.
Right. And you know, from the days, obviously, of cave paintings, you know, art's expression and art is communication. And even though as you say, it's like, I think my friend Mike, I don't think he's a formally trained. And I certainly am not. My stick men are certainly not KC Art Institute quality. But I'm curious though, as a quick aside, is, you know, pardon the pun, there is an art, however, to helping people visualize their thoughts to attain clarity, and grasp simplify complexities, right? And what you said is kind of what I do as a focus group guy. You ask a question of somebody, and I call focus grouping too. I call it playing dumb, because
I love that.
Yes, right?
I love that. That is so, yes. Yes.
You've got an idea, right? Before you even ask the question.
Totally.
It's kind of,
yeah.
It's kind of like they never ask, a lawyer never asks you a question in court they don't already know the answer to, right? But yeah. what I know the answer, but when I'm asking the question, I'm asking you to give me your perception of the answer. And then I'm going to go, I'm going to make that, you know, like a dog being curious about what you're doing face. And then I'm going to go, can you give me more on that? How does that work? And then when you start to see an unwind thinking, right? So is there a way, just with that kind of example, where what we're sketchnoting or what you do comes into play in a meeting?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I think it kind of depends on what the meeting is, but if it is a meeting that hopefully I have been involved in the process of creating the agenda, I kind of know where it is that they need to get to at the end of the day, you know, that is helpful, you know, but that's not, I don't always find myself in situations like that for sure. Sometimes they're like, oh yeah, we need to hire that artist person to come in and do that thing for us. And then they're like, are you available next Tuesday? And I'm like, oh, gosh. You know, so that happens a lot, that it's like, unfortunately, with new people too, it can be a bit of an afterthought. And then in presentations and conferences is like a whole different thing.
Right.
But yeah, like, yes, yeah, sometimes I have like an inkling, at least we know where they're trying to end up. And, you know, I can bring in my facilitation hat in those situations too, and ask for clarity and ask those questions too, to help that conversation, but then also to inform what it is that I need to draw.
Right. Yeah. And are you often in your like webinars and things in particular too, it's a little more demonstrative of the technique, right? Could you tell us how that might work? Like, for example, if a company hired you to kind of explain sketchnoting, do you just kind of create a whiteboard online and then start going through a whole deal? How does that, I know we're describing art here, and I'm sorry, but if that's too weird a question, just tell me to move on.
Well,
but I'm just curious.
I'll answer it, but I don't know if I'm going to answer it quite how you asked it. So I will answer it. So the way that I've kind of like come to teach after about 2 years of really like working through how to teach sketchnoting skills, which is just a fancy word for visual note taking, is unfortunately I start with the aesthetics. I start with really basic drawing skills. And I say unfortunately because that's what people want to learn the most, right? Oh. So I wait to keep the theory of things until later on.
Gotcha.
When I was writing my book, I really leaned heavily on another book that I read called Write Useful Books. And in part of Rob's philosophy is around like, don't front load the theory because you lose people.
Oh, interesting.
You lose people. So my introduction of the book was the hardest part to write because I was really trying to keep it as concise to get to the goods as quickly as possible. So when I teach it, it's really about like, here's how to draw a line. Here's how to draw an arrow. Here's how to draw a box. That's a container. And then different use cases for it. And then kind of get into the process versus the product. Here's some things on thinking about how you think and listen. Here's some things about making sense. Here's how you like go beyond just drawing a line to drawing an icon and stuff. But that, you know, it's later on because I don't want people to feel like because I can't draw an icon right away, this isn't for me, right? And everybody can benefit from the value of visual note-taking, whether or not you have any conceived or experience around quote-unquote art. So it's very different for me. Like, and I certainly have other aspects of my life where I am kind of creating artwork, but this is totally different because you're using the pen, you know, a digital or a marker, crayon or something. You're using it to help yourself think and to break down that clarity and complexity and things. Like it's a tool to help you in your learning journey and less about, oh, I have to create a concise, beautiful looking image.
Oh, 100%. See, that's the thing. Like I look at my tablet and I've tried to do these things, and you kind of reawakened this with me having coming on the show, getting prepared for the show. And I love your book. And I would get all hung up, Ashton, on like, oh, this looks stupid or this doesn't make sense. Or I found myself just doing a lot of arrows to things.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And that's a great way to start, because you have to start somewhere, right?
Okay.
Like if you just draw lines on your first 10, 20, like that's okay. You capture your information and you just draw a few little lines, like that's okay. You know, you don't have, I think people think, unfortunately, that now it's a what, 180 or 360. Now I have to do all drawings, and that is not the case, right?
Yes.
It can be 98% words and 2% little drawing elements, right? And when I say elements, it's like we're still not even talking about like illustrations. We're just talking about your lines to help you connect information, your boxes to help contain information, right? So, and then as you practice, maybe it's like 95% words and 5% drawings or what have you, right? Like it doesn't have to be all of a sudden now everything has to be turned into an image, right? Because that in itself and that thought will, I just think, stops people from actually doing it. So when I talk about it and try to teach it, it's like just trying to encourage the baby steps. And like in the Lisa Condon's book, Find Your Artistic Voice, she talks about the beginner's gap. And I wish I would have read this before I finished my book, because I probably would have included a quote from it. And it's this notion of where you are, your skill set currently is, and where you want it to be, and that huge gap in between. But most people don't muddle through the gap to get to the skill set they want. So they give up before they even try. You know what I mean? And I feel that way, like really heavily with sketchnoting, because I could have certainly, I just like, I'm a very tenacious person. And when I put my mind something to my mind to something, I just do it. And I do it, you know, with everything that I have in me. And that's what's kind of gotten me to the point that I am now, that like, yeah, my sketch notes are very illustrative and they are beautiful, but like they should be. If they're not, after doing this for so long, there's a problem.
If they look like mine, I'd be like, fraud. You know, the very beginning of your book, a vitally important note, your attention, please. It's like a huge, it's this big graphic. You cannot do this wrong. And you go through a few paragraphs about, you know, just like you just said, I don't have to read this to everybody, because you just basically say what you just told me here. Mm-hmm. You can't do this wrong. But, and what I like, and you talked about bridging the gap, you build this wonderful bridge right over the gap with this book. This is so great. It's a beautiful book, and it's like, folks, it's like a workbook style book, and it's beautifully illustrated. Of course, it's very fun. And I like the way you chunk everything out about, and you explain processes. You even get into like color and why color. Now I don't have color on my remarkable, but I was starting to read this and thinking, oh man, I wish I had color on my remarkable, because color does help, doesn't it? Can you expound on that just a little bit? I mean, black and white sketchnoting, I assume, is just fine if that's all you can get with your black. Maybe you just got a pencil and thing, but how does color take it to a different level?
Yeah, well, you can use color for different reasons. So like you could use one color to like highlight some of the main ideas or things that you don't want to forget. Like you can use it like you would, you know, when you were in school as like a highlighter or whatever. The thing with color is sometimes you don't want to overdo it, and time is of the essence. Like if you are visual note-taking and sketchnoting live in real time, which I do try to encourage people to do because it is very scary, but once you do it and you realize it's not too bad, you can't always be switching out your pens digitally or like, you know, physical pens. So kind of a less is more approach is kind of nice. So just like a couple of colors plus like your main color that you're using for your words, like a black or a dark blue or something like that. But yeah, it can, like you can use colors that are complementary, like that really make things pop off the page if you really want to, like, you know, make it pizzazz, like your purples and your yellow together. And, you know, think about I'm not a very sportsy person, if you can imagine, if you didn't guess that already. But imagine like sports teams' jerseys, like they want to stand out on the court.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So those are colors that are going to make things pop a little bit more. So Yeah, you can use color in a couple of different ways, but you can also create really great, you know, awesome, meaningful sketch notes with one or two colors, right? It doesn't always have to be about, you know, one of the biggest questions I always get is about what I recommend for materials. And I purposely didn't put any of that in the book. I do have it in a resource guide off of the book, but those are always changing. And I don't want people to feel like, oh, because I'm not going to like buy these fancy markers that Ashton uses, then I can't do it. Right. Yeah. And you can literally get started with very, very little, like a pencil, a crayon, and a piece of paper. Right. Like it's, you know, so I purposely left materials out of the book for that reason, because I don't want that to be something that people think, oh, well, because I don't have the fancy materials like Ashton, I can't do it.
Well, it's like I mentioned, the remarkable. And you folks, you don't need a special tablet. You don't need a fancy tablet. I got it because I had tended to get towards distraction, and I like it, but mm-hmm. I bought it. It's not internet connected in the sense of you can't go, oh, I'm bored, I'm going to go to the internet. So that's good. But in the time we have left here, it's a beautiful book. The book came out in June, right? Is that
it
right?
Did. Yes, the end of June. Yes.
When did you decide? How long? Let's see, you started your company, what, 2014-ish? Is that right? Is that when you started this?
Yeah, I started my journey 10 years ago this month. And I started my business a year after that. I've been in business for about 9. But those first few years, I was a bit of a secret business. So usually I say I've been running my business for about 7, because those first few years was, a funny time. And I kept having children. So, you know, just multiplying myself. That happens.
That'll distract you a little.
A little bit, yeah.
But the book is great. And once you decided to write the book, was it tough to write?
It actually, like, I had been wanting to write the book like years before I actually wrote it. And once I actually started, it wasn't actually that hard, but I did do beta reading. Okay. And that was incredibly helpful. I don't know how people write books without it, especially nonfiction, because like they pointed out things that, you know, I thought were common sense that were not,
right.
And sweeping things that I missed that I needed to include and clarification and stuff. So the process of writing it with the beta reading was actually not too bad. It was like a year and a half or something like that. But I didn't really have I wanted it to take as long as it needed to take. I didn't have a set.
Smart.
I wasn't working towards a launch day because I didn't want to like, I ended up like a couple months before I released it, I ended up rewriting a whole chapter and throwing out the whole chapter and restarting again and putting it out just to a small group of beta readers to kind of like confirm that I made the right choice in that. But if I wouldn't have, then, you know, probably wouldn't still be released. But to me, it was more important to, you know, do it on its own timeline and make sure that I really, because, you know, that philosophy, I really wanted to write a useful book. I really wanted, you know, someone who's new, like emphasis on the beginner of the beginner's guide, that at the end, they're like, yes, I can do this. Like, I have created some things along the way and I have that confidence, right? So the book is like very cheerleady, you know, little like, let's do this. Like, you got this. There's a lot of that in the book as well, because I want to cheerleader people a way through it. And get build their confidence and their skill set. By the end, they're like, yeah, I can do this. Right. Yeah.
Listeners, take note. This is a great book. There'll be a link in the show notes. I've also got links to Sketchnote School, to her main website. I mean, TikTok. I've got all the links there at PRAfterHours.com. Going to take care of business here with our friend from Mind's Eye Creative, Ashton Rodenheiser. And Ashton, seriously, this book is a revelatory for me. I've got a 15-year-old daughter, just started high school. She and I are looking at it together. I think it'll be a great thing for her to learn as she goes, hopefully, through to college and things like that.
I'm so glad.
Well, you're a delight. And listeners, I hope that you've been doodling while you've listened to this show, and I want you to send me your drawings. We'll post them on the webpage. Seriously, I will. I'll post them online for you if you want. We'll see if anybody catches us on that, Ashton. Ashton Rodenheiser, you are a delight. And seriously, nothing sketchy about you except for these wonderful ways you develop to facilitate learning and processing information. Thanks for joining us here in the virtual lounge.
No problem. I had such a lovely time.
Merry Christmas, brother. I was thinking, let's do something amazing for our fans. How about our podcast live?
Get out of here. You think we could do that?
I think we should do that, and it's going to happen. So I'm thinking downtown Buffalo State Pizza, some pizza. Our killer cocktail will be available. We get up and do our back and forth. And what about some fun giveaways? What are you thinking?
That's a great idea. Hey, you know what? I've got some tickets to a local Christmas show. I've got some books by an author we've all heard of, or at least you and I have heard of. Yeah, let's do that. That sounds like a great idea. So what? Well, we'll just like you and me, like set up the mics and record the show there, and people are there chiming in. They can chime in a little bit, or how's that going to work?
I think we're gonna have the PA set up because you know I'm a rock and roll guy. And we will broadcast out to the world. If our fans want to ignore us, they can ignore us. But if they're into the podcast, you know, while you're eating your pizza, getting your drink on, what a great way to celebrate the holiday season by hearing about a crazy, crazy story that happened here in Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a killer time. I think we should do this. When are we going to do it?
I'm thinking Monday, December 11th, 7 p.m., Buffalo State Pizza, 1815 Wyandotte. That's down on the crossroads. And Alex, let me guess, are you thinking of a link that they can RSVP to?
I think there is a great link on the Facebook page. There's an event page, okay? But if you can't find that, there is a great place to go. It's brand new. It's called killingcitypod.com. It is our website. If you listen to the show regularly, you know we've been talking about it. We've been threatening to do it. And you guys, by downloading the show so much and being so excited and posting great reviews, I just said to Jamie, I said, dude, we got to pull the trigger. We were going to wait till next year. I was like, let me just do it. I'll build it. Let's go.
And it looks great. So people join us Monday, December 11th, 7 p.m. I put a link down in the show notes. You don't even have to remember what Alex and I just said. Just hit the button. That's all you got to do. All right. We'll see you soon, folks.
Why do people listen to PR After Hours? Don't take my word for it. Listen to Joel Freund, CEO of Fluax Media.
I'm going on a lot of podcasts, and your podcast, the conversation with you is just so authentic and so real that I actually enjoy it. I don't even feel like it's a podcast.
Follow us now wherever you get your podcasts, or visit PRAfterHours.com and get on our subscription list so you never miss an episode.
You know what that means. It's last call here at the Virtual Lounge. Be sure to visit PRAfterHours.com for links to what we discussed in this episode and more. Be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And join us next time for another round at PR After Hours with Alex Greenwood.